ivory billed woodpecker.
No, we're out of those. Tail chub. No, I'm sorry. They're all gone.
European blue whale.
Pink and black socks.
Iron and green wren.
Charcoal gray suits. Fair
Isle no, wren.
1957
Persian
Fords.
Persian fallow deer.
Sorry, I ain't got any.
Get a job. False no, sunbird. Fat tailed lemur.
Trumpeter swallow.
Darwin's finch.
American alligator. Ipswich sparrow.
Iroquois.
Black footed ferret.
Orc martin's
warbler. Klamath sucker, Vegas Valley leopard frog,
hawk,
masked bobwhite,
Galapagos,
Jimmy Southwick bald eagle,
American purple gallimule,
Eskimo curlew,
Nikolai
Tesla,
Hal Roach,
Delmarvin Peninsula
Charlie
fox,
Chaplin,
black toad, springs.
And as we flew along the east coast of Hudson's Bay, this flat, flat
I don't go. Let me say this
again.
I don't go for
little.
This Northmanship bit at all.
Because it just seemed endless.
I don't.
We seemed to be going into nowhere.
Not those people who do claim that.
And
they
the further north we went,
farther north and
the
so
more
on.
Monotonous.
But I see it as a kind of a game, this Northmanship bit, with people
snow
saying, "Well, you know,
right,
were you ever up at the North Pole? You know, and hell, I did a,
no,
a dog sled trip of 22 days, and the other fellow comes up, well, I did one of 30 days.
And then for another 11 years.
Perhaps they would see themselves as more.
Sure, the North has changed my life. I can't conceive anyone being in close touch with the North, whether he lived there all the time or simply traveled it month after month and year after year. I can't conceive of such a person being really untouched by the North for the rest of his life.
Of the mass media.
When I left in 1965, at least left the job there,
it goes on like this. Is, oh, there's some special
it wasn't because of being tired
merit,
of the
some
North,
virtue to being in the North,
no
or
anything
some special
store,
virtue
as keen as ever.
In having been with the primitive people.
Servant, I was asked to do another
special
job
virtue
which you're
in that. And,
it is most difficult.
So I find
I suppose the
it was extreme isolation.
I think
this
more
is very true.
Baker Lake,
I had and I knew very well I could not go anywhere except for a mile or two
if
walking.
Indeed it is ever changing.
I always think of the long summer nights
when
the snow had melted, the lakes were open, and the geese and ducks had started to fly. During that time, the sun would set. But when there was still the last shimmer in the sky, I would walk out to one of those lakes and watch those ducks and geese just fly around peacefully or sitting on the water. And I felt that I was almost part of that country, part of that peaceful surrounding. And I wished that it would never end.
Are we right to open
the mass media, which incidentally,
the real truth
true
about the North,
for me as a North, because of the fact that whenever I spoke to
but
him,
where they
do
on the first white man,
the far north
supreme,
I think people tend to go for the more
the rest of the world.
For instance,
first adventure
in
this is Glenn Gould, and this program is called The Idea of North. I've long been intrigued by that incredible tapestry of tundra and taiga which constitutes the Arctic and subarctic of our country. I've read about it, written about it, and even pulled up my parka once and gone there. Yet, like all but a very few Canadians, I've had no real experience of the North. I've remained, of necessity, an outsider. And the North has remained for me a convenient place to dream about, spin tall tales about, and in the end, avoid. This program, however, brings together some remarkable people who have had a direct confrontation with that northern third of Canada, who've lived and worked there, and in whose lives the North has played a very vital role. There's a geographer and anthropologist, Jim Lotz, a sociologist, Frank Valley, a government official, Bob Phillips, and a nurse, Marianne Schrader. And there's also a fifth character, and therein lies a story. Several years ago, I went north aboard a train known affectionately to Westerners as the Muskeg Express, Winnipeg to Fort Churchill, 1,015 miles, two nights, one day, four double bedrooms, eight sections, diner, and coach. And at breakfast, I struck up a conversation with one W.V. McLean, or as he was known along the line and at all the hamlet sidings where his bunk car would be parked, Wally. Wally McLean is a surveyor, now retired, and within the first minutes of what proved to be a day-long conversation, he endeavored to persuade me of the metaphorical significance of his profession. He parlayed surveying into a literary tool, even as Jorge Luis Borga manipulates mirrors and Franz Kafka badgers beetles. And as he did so, I began to realize that his relation to a craft which has as its subject the land enabled him to read the signs of that land, to find in the most minute measurement a suggestion of the infinite, to encompass the universal within the particular. And so, when it came time to organize this program and to correlate the disparate views of our four other guests, I invited Wally McLean to be our narrator. and to tell me how, in his view, one can best attain an idea of the North.
Well, the only way I see this happening is in an extended ride north. When I say that, I mean a long, terrible, trying trip, perhaps to Churchill, by way of Thompson, going and coming, past Ilford and Gillam, this long, almost trans-Siberian experience that we now face. And for those that face it, perhaps for the first or second or third time, there's almost a traumatic experience. They feel, this is going to become impossible. It may not be now, but it's going to become. And yet they are able to do little or nothing about it.
This is where the DJ talks. Don't say anything.
Okay.
Oh, beauty, go. Okay. Good day and welcome to our single. I'm Bob McKenzie, and this is my brother Doug. How's it going, eh? Beauty, eh?
Yeah, I like that.
Okay.
Okay, everyone, this record was my idea.
Get out!
It was.
You're lying.
Pete Hosehead here just sort of rid on my coattails.
Why are you doing this? It was our idea together, eh?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay.
We agreed to say that, but...
Oh, take off!
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
Okay, so good day. Our topic today is music.
That's right, like, because my brother and I are now experts in the field,
yeah,
eh?
Right, because we're a band now. And,
Well, except for him. I'm a band.
Oh, how can you do that, making me look bad? You're such a hose hand.
Yeah, well, take off.
Take off to the great white north. Take off. It's a beauty way to go. It's a drum solo.
Okay, everyone, like, this is me on the drums.
Oh,
eh?
Get out. It is not.
It
your
is
line.
So.
Stop
I
lying,
learn.
Will you?
Take off, eh?
Take off to the great white north. Take off. It's a beauty way to go. Take off to the great white north. Take off. It's a beauty way to go. Take off.
Beauty, eh?
Like magic, eh?
Yeah.
It's coming in.
Well, that's like...
It's like it was sung by angels.
Yeah, what?
Guess what?
What?
It's over. Take off. That can't be.
It is, yeah. It is. Because
hit records are short.
No way.
Yeah, they're not that long.
Okay, so that's our topic for today. So, good day.
Good day.
And you guys,
what?
Take off.
Hey, no. Hey, don't go.
No, come back, eh?
Oh, look what you did. Everybody's gone.
You.
Come back.
I won't let him do it again.
Yeah.
My fault was, your fault.
You're such a hoser.
There's no way I'll ever do another record with you, Hoser. Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. I'll do a solo album.
Fine, and you'll be looking for me on another label.
Oh, now everybody's gone.
Good day.
Santa Fe Red. Uno. Dos. String
pinion
logs,
chillers
in a nest,
a fire,
fire,
slick
as lava,
rolls across
hot as cinders,
tiles
wet as flesh,
red eyed
smolders
against
weight.
The ash white wall.
Well, there's a fascinating book called Crossbow and Caliber, The Psychology of Colonization, by a man called Oscar Manoli, who wrote about the same Republic of Madagascar. And he brings up this idea of, you know, Prospero in the Tempest could only be Prospero simply because he had Caliban to do all the dirty work. And he points out the sort of a kind of a symbiosis in these colonial situations where we think, you know, we're helping the Eskimo, we're doing things for the Eskimo, and, you know, he should be grateful to us. And we feel that we are, you know, in a sense, manipulating him. We don't seem to realize there's another end to this, that he is manipulating us. We have some detailed evidence on this in George River. that, you know, because we say, the wonderful Rankin Inlet,
which at that time was quite a place to which yes, we were moving. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
And he will play this only insofar as it sort of keeps us happy.
A few hundred working in the mines.
I think there's something fairly insidious about this.
And there was a great deal of dispute going on as to whether this
well,
was
well, in our impatience, and the hour here, I think, is the people of Canada, or people of Canada who have some interest in the North.
In their nature to observe the
I think we've often tended to do a disservice to Northerners by putting them in places they shouldn't quite be. That is, putting them in places they haven't earned themselves. Putting them in places which we hope they will earn themselves.
Debates, that is, about
there's a tendency at times to show one's respectability anywhere in this continent by having on your board of directors a tame Negro or a tame female or a tame Indian.
Any white woman who goes north has a very specific
purpose.
Usually she is married to a man who is with the Department of Northern Affairs or whatever.
But there is behind it a sort of
so the wife accompanies her husband. She probably has a number of small children.
We're terribly good fellows and broad-minded, we whites, and we do want to turn things over to you Eskimos. So come and sit on our board, so to speak. I don't literally mean a board, of course.
Lip reading for Sylvia Frumpkin. I was an eye on a stick. I was my son's voice. I was a landscape.
I was
like
only
a
half a lover.
I wanted to write a poem on a rock. I wanted to hear you talking
out of the country.
Me. I thought about how I could fuck you. I thought I'd write about the birds. I lay in bed
I
to
lied
bed.
About it.
And then there's such a tendency for the Eskimo, the Northern Indian, to be a kind of showpiece, a doll, a puppet. And this doesn't do anybody any good. Because those who are sitting quietly back on the rock watching all this say, you see, those fellows never know anything. How can they discuss a budget? Heavens, they're not understanding anything at all. They're just serving as the sort of stooges for you whites who have all the power.
Because the Eskimo society is
definitely patriarchal. Well, that's one of the dilemmas.
The Nunamut, the people who live on the land, resist the kinds of situation where they become dependent on someone in the settlement. They're friendly with people in the settlement.
Traders, churches, into the hands of fairly small local people who don't have any huge institutions behind them.
On the other hand, we've only been in the North in any sort of strength for about, 12 or 13 years. And the Eskimos weathered worse things than civil servants and bureaucrats and the invasion of white foreigners. Nobody
like playing a role in the settlement.
Only the last in a sense.
Live in the land, when they come into the settlements, there's nothing they like better than to go to a church service, sing,
and holler. The Eskimo is no stranger to the white man. He has a good press image, of course. And I'm inclined to think we admire the Eskimo, not as a stereotype, but as someone who was able to sort of live and survive. Eskimos lived, hunted, and raised children
in the settlement. And to the extent you do that, so much of your selfhood is given to the life there.
The man is definitely the head of the household, the head of the society. A woman is only a woman. She has to stay in the background, and never do you find a woman.
I'm inclined to think if we will only look at the Eskimo, not as a quaint, funny little hunter or as an artist or all these ghastly cliches that clutch up our literature, if we can only look upon him as a sort of a human being and adapt some of his ways of doing things, his culture, his values. For instance,
I couldn't really understand his attitude.
Missiveness rather than authoritarianism. A sense of community rather than a sense of individualism.
Of course, it's pretty unfair, I suppose, morally, to judge the past
by today. Made arrangements with another woman to take that particular baby after it was born. She would adopt the baby with the consent of her husband, of course. And they all very much hoped for a boy. Anyway, the woman came to the nursing station to have her baby, and it turned out to be a girl, to the disappointment of the whole group and the family.
But for today,
the frightening part,
it's not good
part
enough.
Was the fact that they named the girl Carmala, which means a parasite, a worm,
kind of
because of the simple fact that she was
kind
a girl.
Of paternalism in our
and after that,
these are Canadian citizens, and let's face it, the igloo is not a part of Canadian life, because the life expectancy of 27 years isn't a part of Canadian life.
You see, it makes sense to me to send Eskimos to the moon, I mean, we're happy to go to the moon, simply because they're accustomed to living in isolation. They're accustomed to living enclosed for extended periods of time. If you look at the records of what happened in the Antarctic stations, where we had aggressive, individualistic white men huddled up together for a winter, there's some pretty grisly things came out of that. If we
people
don't sort of
who have committed themselves to settlement living, and particularly those who have received more than, say, grade 5 education, yeah, which is equivalent almost to...
I'd like to see Eskimos, for instance, employed as consultants in our school systems, telling our school kids exactly what it was like. I remember I watched my small daughter's Christmas play, or whatever
the outsider
it was,
has to pass
things,
through
quite sure
the screen.
Schools. And the kids were sort of portraying Eskimos.
These are the people who
I am a great hunter, I am an artist, etc. Well, of course, you know, for most of the Eskimos, it would have been, I do jobs that no white man will do because they're either too low toast status or too, you know, dirty. Yeah, I'd like to see the Eskimos into the school system.
These are the people who are becoming
how it really was.
Closest things that the Eskimos have to
really
nationals.
And how it's changed. Gibberation, the printed page that was out of date at the time it was written.
Hopi, Apache, Nisqually, Shoshone,
Apache, Nisqually, Shoshone,
Shoshone,
Apache,
Apache,
Shoshone,
Shoshone,
Apache,
Apache,
Shoshone,
Apache,
Apache,
Shoshone,
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 Apache,
Shoshone,
Apache,
Shoshone,
Apache,
For Dr. Avocado.
Avocado, nahuatl, chocolate.
Alligator pear, crocagator pear, that's why they so mean.
No, no, no.
Nose, many nose, or.
Nose, as in he, she, it, nose.
Or nose, as in.
Plain as the nose on your face.
Bozos, known by their nosos.
From the Spanish, bosotros, the V. And the B being the same.
I.E. Viz, BVD, Biz. Underwear industry. It is estimated that no underwear will be worn by the year 2020. Hoover, damn.
Daddy is Hoover's mother. I remember Mama Life with Father.
We used to call him the Hoover.
Oh, you're such a little devil. She little knew her little boy would invent
vacuum cleaner. June 8th. 1869 Ives Lagaffney in Chicago, ill,
sick, tired.
Please, doctor, listen to me. Please, doctor.
I've been having them Asperger's.
Asperger's is that
means
disease.
It lowers my effect, and I don't seem to care about you at all, only me.
Asperger's is the disease where you forget what it is that you're suffering
from.
No.
Asperger's, man, I'll tell you, you eat them and you become really self-centered. Arrogant and thoroughly in love with yourself.
You ever had Cajun
and you have no
Asperger's?
Ability to really
blackened Asperger's.
Empathy. It's not sociopathy, but it's one step.
God, it is amazing. I mean, how self-indulgent has any group of entertainers ever been?
We are it.
Including, for God's sake, weren't we named entertainers of the 50 entertainers of the year
yes,
of the last century?
No, of the century.
We've been honored,
we've been honored
by the fucking Library of Congress.
Well, we're in the Library of Congress.
And
no, they didn't return us.
This is what we do.
What do you mean
somebody took us out of the Library of Congress, hasn't returned us.
Oh, they checked
really?
Us out?
That's right, they checked us out, and I went and I called up. No, you're not there. It's overdue.
No, that's terrible.
We're overdue at the Library of Congress. That's insane.
It's going to cost us a fortune.
Here's why. Here, take a page. Take a page.
I got it.
Here.
Oh, okay.
This is
There's
it.
Hamburger all over the highway in Mystic, Connecticut.
Clone me, Dr. Memory.
It's just this little chromium switch here.
I said live it or live with it.
Hey, Paolo, he broke the president.
Give them a light and they'll follow it anywhere.
Holy mudhead, mackerel.
The Department of Redundancy Department.
My God, I've got jaundice. He stopped on a dime. Uh-oh. Unfortunately, the dime was in Mr. Rococo's pocket.
Now, I'm not one to sanction stupidity as a national pastime, but...
Oh. But...
But, well, that I guess that ended it.
How about
nice poem.
Is this your bar of soap?
Mm. That one always gets. They know that. That's iconic.
We'll wash our hands after we weave,
and if we're a girl before,
what the hell did that?
And we'll march, etc. Till we don't have to march no more.
Don't have to march no more.
Don't have to march no more.
Girls are dainty.
Do you know
it was
we
really
were
about the icebox?
That was Occupy America, man. Yeah. We're bringing the war back home. Isn't that what OWS is doing?
It's in the water.
Not a violent war. It's an ironic war. It's very brave.
But which war are we talking about? What?
To your point. You have one?
Sorry.
How
you,
self...
Hey, you told me you were coming in here without a point. I left mine at the hotel.
Don't point that finger at me, man. I'll cut it off.
It's all about
how
edge, isn't it? Really, it's just edge.
Self-indulgent can we be?
I don't know. Let's keep talking.
How did we pull this off?
Because it's KBOO. It's free.
No, I'm talking about your entire career.
This is
career,
retro.
Your
yes.
life. I'm talking about your life.
How did you pull this
You're trying
off?
To make me nauseous.
How did you
no,
pull
you
this
are.
Off?
No. You are trying to make me nauseous talking that way all the way back. You just took.
Have a toke. You'll feel better.
Up.
No, if I get closer to the mic, it'll make you feel even
oh,
more
that's
nauseous.
Better. It sounds like
because
sex
this
with my hat.
Is my nauseous voice.
Hey, can you give me sex with my
this
hat voice?
This is the Dr. Winky Dink voice.
Doctor, I've got a problem.
What is your problem?
Well, I got a problem, which is
tell
I'm
me your problem.
I'm losing
massage your problem.
I'm losing my optimism,
hair?
Doctor.
No,
that's it. I
optimism.
Just said it. It's a great relief. I'm losing my optimism. I thought he was dispensational. He's just a nice guy who likes to drone wedding parties, and so I would like to get my optimism back.
I lost my ophthalmologist just the other day, and I can't see my way to find another.
He's running Syria. Yeah, he is.
Is he?
Yeah, you hear that rogue ophthalmologist? What's his name? Assad.
That's what I said.
Well, he's in trouble.
Yeah, he went back to Wall Street.
No, really?
No, yeah, he went back to Wall Street.
You mean he was on, because Syria putting so much squeeze on him,
well,
he went to Wall Street?
He was there in the UN.
It was the Great Wall of China Street.
They had him for a week, and then he went back to Wall Street.
It's all insider stuff.
Sure.
That's
wonderful. I mean, could you run a big country?
No.
Could you run a little country?
No, I'm not people. Corporations are. I don't
well,
have
there
the
you,
wherewithal.
There you go. So you got to have a guy who can run a country and knows that corporations are people.
I'm
or
running people. My own country.
Uh-oh.
Oh, that one.
There we go.
See? I got my own country gone.
You just gave me my appetite back. Thank you very much, because these guys were making
hey,
me nauseous.
In my country, we are holding your optimism for ransom.
Oh, no. That is so uncouth, and yet it is ironic.
It's ironic and cruel.
Yes.
And
cruelly
ironic.
It's a money-making idea.
Yes.
Yeah, I like it.
Because if you want your optimism back, you better just pay me.
Yes. Hey, wait a minute.
No.
Tell that guy Obama that he can chip in.
You know what you're telling me? You're telling me to long tail my optimism.
I don't know.
Are you crazy?
I don't know what that means. What is a long tail?
Long tail is where you go a long time making just a little bit of money and you brand yourself up until you're truly optimistic. That's long tailing, like retailing. They got to come in the store and get robbed.
Wait a minute. You just used the word money.
Ingratiating himself.
Yeah, he's trying.
I don't even know what. I just don't have any money, so I don't see how I could long.
I don't see how they let you in the room, man.
No, they don't.
You're well dressed. Are those your clothes?
We should have run this.
Really? That's very kind of what? In Northwest? No, how is he dressed?
Talking over each other.
He's wearing flannel. He's wearing Uggs.
They are talking.
He's like layered to the
point. The only thing weird about him is he hasn't got a mustache.
And it's wet.
Talking.
Not enough facial hair.
Yeah, I mean, I'm back in L.A. I don't even know what time it is down there. There's only one season, you know. Coffee shop.
This is
the only season.
This is George Tirebiter. And I'd like to remind you that everyone knows that this is the midst of the disillusionment and heartbreak season.
Yeah, I told you. I lost my optimism.
There you go.
Is who following the script?
Right, going right from the top. There's a full run.
Name of the actress? Was it the first time theater?
Yes.
Well, more or less. Phil's laying down asleep. Now KPFK presents for a new special. Okay. Conditioning theoretically is off, right?
Oh, you guys are so crazy!
Ah,
I think that's as funny today as it first was back in the sizzling 70s.
That's right. I'm Dexter Fong. Nothing will make me forget the thrill we had making funny records. Yes, my late partner Hideo Wallbanger and I,
we're the men of modern comedy.
And today, when the satellite net is crammed with the stupid drivel of the Hot Humorous 100, where can a gone cat like yourself
get the laughs if we love them just for you?
What thrilling moments. Well, they're all yours now on a double fun, double deal. Dope Humor of the 70s, Volumes 1 and 2.
Who can forget such modern comedy as
Cheech Chong, Abel, and the Jets?
In five acts, three of them unnatural. Two of them against the state. We'll be back with more sports in just a second. But first, the seed!
Look out,
the darkened mind of three living souls.
I want to read you a few more poems, some recent things. And first of all, because you've been good listeners and all, I'll give you something that will require, once again, your divided attention. I like things which demand that you use more than one part of your brain at a time. That's what the Fire Sign albums did in their layers of complexity, and that's what I try to do in some poems, although I'm not, I don't bring my tape recorder along and, you know, I'm not into that kind of, but I do have a tape here that I will put on. So I can read some poems for two voices.
Gould layered the speaking voices in his documentary to create a sonic environment somewhere between conversation and music. He called his radical new technique contrapuntal radio.
And he wanted a place in there somehow.
Now, he went up to a really...
That may sound a bit pretentious,
today,
but I think it was part of...
Looks like suburban...
One could use the word mystical
St.
about
Catherine's
Glenn.
Or something.
He was careful not to articulate that.
The idea
that.
Of North certainly didn't...
But he would have done, had he been 60
Glenn
or 70,
you
know,
city, and he would wander later, up to Aurelia,
I don't know.
I assume.
That's one of the questions about Glenn.
Thing.
What would have happened had he lived past 50? He did for 10 days
the
or whatever it was.
He didn't
but I think the fact is that
in his playing,
he wanted to be part of something very big, very large.
And, he probably
and I don't mean that as indicating any great pretensions. On the contrary, it's all very
Plus
private.
Is, you know, when I came
That's
here,
why
I
the wonder of the North, his mystical North.
Now that's 30 years I've lived here.
Was so important to
it.
It was a big world.
But still, you know, the ravines.
We have many religious traditions that have language for this.
There's,
I never heard Glenn use that
an
language.
Atmosphere
what
that
he
is,
thought privately, I don't know. There may be others with whom he did use language
not so
like
much
that.
Anymore, I hate to say,
but I don't think
was,
we could ever take his interest in the North
like a British
narrowly. I think it's very open and wide and
with,
deep
you know,
in its implications. Or perhaps you could say high.
It was not
there was a
rural,
heaven aspect
but
to the thing.
Tranquil. It was tranquil.
And he did love
it wasn't boring when I came here.
That dimension in Wagner.
70s, but it was a tranquil
he did love that dimension in Richard Strauss.
I had just, you know,
and the German great German romantic 19th century traditions. And he loved it in Bach.
I couldn't do it.
So he was brought up with
Toronto, and I
a very
and they said,
modest,
and I said, fine, headed up.
Kind of Protestantism.
The moment I got here, you
but
know.
But it never that. Had dismissed
it was,
heaven.
It was a beautiful
That tradition
place.
Did not dismiss heaven. And
it's like
associated
you know,
with harmony, great music, and great deep respect for the unknown. I think those are all very important.
I think it had nothing to do with North.
To Glenn.
Absolutely nothing whatsoever.
the search for what is.
I think it would have had to do with solitude.
And letting that come out.
And Glenn had this enormous fascination with solitude. A, he showed it in his own life. He loved to be alone, and he loved to work alone, and he loved to express his ideas, particularly on paper, alone. And so when we talk about North, what he's doing is he's imagining the solitude that is simply part and parcel of being in the North. And I think that was the fascination, was the idea of solitude, not so much the idea of North. It was the idea of solitude. I think radio gave him more of an opportunity to explore the mind, not just his mind, but yours and to the listener. He layers ideas on top of each other. He juxtaposes those with your spiritual ideas or your emotional ideas or with just the way you think. And he imposes these all on top. The composition is structure is just startling.
Solitude was one of the things that he believed in very strongly, once again generalizing from what was personally successful for him. I think creation in solitude is very logical. You don't want distractions, and he eliminated distractions whenever he could. And so he was interested in the phenomenon of solitude and in celebrating it. So he wound up with subjects that thematically reinforced his preoccupations. He told me that one of his favorite things to do was get into the car at night and drive to truck stops where truckers would be in those restaurants. And he would sit in a booth and eavesdrop on them. And that for him was great fun. And I think you can find the reflection of that in his radio documentaries, the Solitude Trilogy. The idea of being able to eavesdrop on people who didn't know you were listening and to use what they said for your own purposes.
But I think he was trying to devise by practical experience out of sound, which he understood very well through radio studios and the coming of tape, all the new technologies of sound, a kind of dramatic forms.
It was fascinating to watch him there. He had edited sequences, and he was showing me
the
things.
The journalistic side
and
of
his
nature.
He would
they were not only news, they were
his technician, Lauren Tulk, was there working with him. And he would
about new and
have a pencil in his hand, and he would conduct. This voice should be coming up, that voice should be coming down. And it was almost as though it were a musical performance. And for him, it was a kind of musical construction. He interviewed these various people independently. They had not met each other. And then he created conversations. He created conversations with their voices. And he took inordinate pride. He was once showing me a Richard Strauss documentary. And I've forgotten over a number of seconds he had done 200 edits. I mean, somebody once defined genius as the infinite capacity for taking pains or capacity for taking infinite pains. If so, that was his qualification. He loved that detail and that sense of control he had over other forces.
To him, it was a composition, and he didn't write it so he'd be popular or so that people would enjoy it. He wrote it. He had something to say, which is probably why most composers write what they compose, because they have something to say. In his case, the language was a little different than black notes on paper, as Stokowski would say. It was words, real words on paper, and real thoughts, and real ideas, and real philosophy, and real imagination. But it was all there on paper. And Glenn,
yes, it was polyphony. It was so overwhelmingly musical, and
ideas.
Hearing these voices and
just like
the way they were intertwined, that it was. In a way, it was also like voices you might hear in your head somewhere. Now, I don't want to say that I hear St. Michael speaking to me or anything, but these are like voices. They're like the voices that are out there of all these millions of radio waves that have gone out into space. It was really, it was the polyphony. It was the way these voices blended.
In Los Angeles today, comedian Lenny Bruce dies of what was believed to be an overdose of narcotics.
call off the march, and the police in Cicero said they would ask the National Guard be called out if it is held. King now in Atlanta, Georgia, plans to return to Chicago Tuesday. In Chicago, Richard Speck, accused murderer of 9 student nurses, was brought before a grand jury today for indictment. The nurses were found stabbed and strangled in their Chicago apartment. In Washington, the atmosphere was tense today as a special subcommittee of the House Committee on Un-American Activities continued its probe into anti-Vietnam War protests. Demonstrators were forcibly evicted from the hearings when they began chanting anti-war slogans. Former Vice President Richard Nixon says that unless there is a substantial increase in the present war effort in Vietnam, the U.S. should look forward to 5 more years of war. In a speech before the Convention of the Veterans of Foreign Wars in New York, Nixon also said opposition to the war in this country is the greatest single weapon working against the U.S. That's the 7 o'clock edition of the news. Good night.
I've done it too. Now I know just what it feels like. Just like I said, there's no regrets. Well, it's about time to close. I hope you've had as much fun as we have. Don't forget the jam session Sunday. Mandy Tension will be by. Play the xylophone tree. It's been a lot of fun. Monday night's dance contest night. Swiss contest. Gonna give away peanut butter jelly bologna sandwiches for all of you. It really has been fun. I hope we've played your requests, the songs you like to hear. Last call for alcohol. Thank you, that folks.
I'd always sort of wanted to work with people of the North. And in 1960, I transferred to the Department of Northern Affairs and National Resources as a community planning officer. The first thing I was asked to undertake was a study of the squatters of Whitehorse. These were a group of people who ultimately, at least in my own work, turned out to be a key to the way that the North is viewed in Canada, the way the North can, may, and has developed.
Well,
these people had a
somehow the sameness
bad
of a trip in.
I was told by all
and a trip
hands
out
that when I went up to the spot,
is part of this endless feeling
rail,
that we are up against
river,
this
Yukon
myth, this business of having to do things for
all these sorts of
no
hairy
apparent
stories
reason.
About the wicked squatters. Well, I
fine.
Found, of course, that
you say to yourself,
these were a bunch of
well,
people
which of these
the
people I've seen now
in an area whose economic future
am I going to say hello to?
Uncertain.
Well, it isn't as though you've lasted that long. You've said hello
nice,
to half a dozen, maybe 15.
Nice,
but you had no intention to
nice, tidy,
sort of establish, what is that they call it?
They lived as
rapport
well as they could
with anyone in particular.
I know it's
now
kind
you find it necessary.
Some of my best friends
isn't that funny? You find
squatters
it necessary.
How many
years,
David?
My green
listen
thing.
Up, listen up. How many years have we been doing this on the radio?
One,
roughly,
two,
roughly.
Three,
no,
one,
45.
45.
That's 9
years we've been talking over each other.
Yeah. Yes.
And we still seem to find it amusing.
Because we can hear each other. The poor Joes out there that are listening, right? We, all they hear is...
No. Here's the other...
And
here's
all
the
together,
other.
We all talk over each other.
And weirdest of all...
Yeah. What's the weirdest... Is this it?
We think we're funny.
Yeah, we do. My daughter doesn't think we're funny, except she did recently.
Recently. I would love to agree with her. Yeah, I would like to be the kind of person that thinks we're not funny. Yeah.
But I keep finding you guys funny, and I keep being drawn back.
Yes, because of the stupid sound effects. They obviously have some kind of hypnotic effect on you.
You're funny!
It allows him to dominate things in a way that he can do with his hands.
And it's so retro. No. This is a guy that's making his voice heard through double A's. Can you imagine? I mean, it is so beautifully retro when there's so much else going on. You know what I mean?
It's my name is Phil Proctor, and I'm retroactive.
My name is Phil Proctor, and I'm retroactive. Mic check. Mic check.